Good evening, everyone. This evening, I wanted to do an exploration of one of the directions in the Eightfold Path, which is right speech, and which we find highlighted in our precepts again and again, these different encouragements and cautions around speech, because speech is so important. So central in our behavior and in the possibility of creating healing or the possibility of creating harm in this world. I've been thinking a lot about this encouragement toward right speech lately. It's been high up in my list of priorities, and I thought it would be interesting to explore with you what that means. We are encouraged to use right speech. So I thought I'd share with you first some quotes from some suttas or sutras. You'll get to hear some of the words attributed to Buddha. So first, from the Vaka Sutta. Monks, a statement endowed with five factors is well spoken, not ill spoken. It is blameless and unfaulted by knowledgeable people. Which five? It is spoken at the right time. It is spoken in truth. It is spoken affectionately. It is spoken beneficially. It is spoken with a mind of goodwill. A statement endowed with these five factors is well spoken, not ill spoken. It is blameless and unfaulted by knowledgeable people. And from the Sabbasita Sutra, the Blessed One said, monks, speech endowed with four characteristics is well spoken, not poorly spoken. Faultless and not to be faulted by the wise. Which four? There is the case where a monk says only what is well spoken, not what is poorly spoken, only what is just, not what is unjust, only what is endearing, not what is unendearing, only what is true, not what is false. Speech endowed with these four characteristics is well spoken, not poorly spoken, faultless, and not to be faulted by the wise. And from the Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha said, the one that I consider the most excellent and sublime is the one who speaks dispraise of someone who deserves dispraise. And the dispraise is accurate, truthful, and timely. So in this case, three criteria: accurate, truthful, and timely. And who also speaks praise of someone who deserves praise, and the praise is accurate, truthful, and timely. For what reason? Because what excels is knowledge of the proper time to speak in any particular case. And from the Anguttara Nikaya, monks, a resident monk is deposited in heaven, and as if brought there, if having investigated and scrutinized, he speaks dispraise of one who deserves dispraise, or having investigated and scrutinized, he speaks praise of one who deserves praise. Here the Buddha tells the monks that they not only may, but should speak dispraise of one who deserves dispraise. Clearly, speaking dispraise of someone is not going to be regarded as gentle, endearing, and pleasant speech, necessarily, either by the one on the receiving end or the ones who hear it. So, are you feeling overwhelmed? Who can possibly take into consideration all of these different criteria for right speech? It's quite difficult, especially given that, you know, in the moment we're having these exchanges with people that can be quite quick. You're in the midst of one conversation and someone else jumps in and, you know, then you're talking to two people at once and that person asks you a question and then they jest with each other and turn toward you and you just spout something out. And then maybe you walk away and you think, oh my God, I just broke the precept of right speech. And that's quite common, right? That we are just caught up in moments. But what this is most fundamentally calling us to is a kind of mindfulness in our speech, a recognition of the power of speech. We've certainly been studying as a culture this concept of microaggressions, ways, I'm not sure I love that term, but I'll use it for now because you know what I'm referring to, ways that we can, you know, almost unconsciously insult one another by not really taking into account the recipient of our speech, by not really taking into account their perspectives as deeply as we can. And we're aware that these things hurt when we do them. Now, I want to highlight something. For me, it's incredibly important to hold these guidelines with great sincerity, but also with humility, with a recognition that as human beings who are conditioned in a larger culture, we're going to learn patterns of behavior that sometimes hurt people. And that humility is why we have our atonement, because we can hear from others how our speech has landed. And that's a great gift when we are shared, when people share with us how our speech has landed, because it gives us an opportunity to atone, to apologize, to wake up, and to vow to do better, to do our best not to cause harm out of a practice of compassion. Nonetheless, our speech should not necessarily be guided only by whether it is received in a way that someone might consider endearing. That's not the only criteria for right speech. So, what should we practice? I've been thinking a lot about this. How might we synthesize these many different encouragements for right speech in a way that we can remember, that works for us on the fly in a busy life without recalling, you know, many different sutras with different guidances? So for me, here's my encouragement, my synthesis. Although I encourage you to create your own if something different works for you. I feel it's powerful and useful to mindfully reflect before speaking whenever possible, or as we are speaking, to be attentive to whether our speech is at least 2 out of 3 of the following. 1, is it true? And this, here the Buddha offers an encouragement that is pretty radical. There are even sutras where the Buddha is quoted as having said, even if you're kidding, you should not lie. I think that's something for us to just recognize as a teaching. There are times when I'm kidding, and my joke is, of course, not true. But is it possible for me to make a joke that is actually sarcastic and hurtful? And the answer is yes, of course. Oh, I didn't mean it, we say. But we've just said something that was untrue that really stung someone nonetheless, even though we say it was a joke. So that's where I think that encouragement is coming from. So we want to think about whether what we say is true. We don't want to mislead people or get people into trouble and also have to live with our own lies, deceive ourselves in our own lies. What we are, so much of what we are doing in our practice is seeking the truth of who we are, the truth of what we are, the truth, and when I say we, I mean we, not just ourselves. What are we? And when we deceive ourselves, we get lost. It's very deeply important that we do our best to speak true. Number two, is it helpful? And I think that when I reflect on helpful, I kind of weave timely into that. It might be that something we have to say would be helpful in one circumstance, but not in another, even though it's true. When somebody is really, really hurting, is that the time to tell them how they screwed up? Maybe not. It may be true. But maybe for that moment, we could just tell them that we love them and hold them and offer them some compassion and wait for the right moment to offer something that they could receive rather than, say, get defensive and angry or whatever else might come up, just cause a rift in the relationship. We can wait for a moment till they could hear it and it would actually be helpful to them. So timely is a part of what I would describe as helpful. And of course, that does include meaning that we have a goodwill for them because we're trying to be helpful. So for me, helpful synthesizes timely and with a goodwill. And then number three, there's so many different words for this, endearing through the sutras, but kind. Kindness. Is it kind? And I would say kind doesn't always have to be one of the criteria. It's, of course, wonderful when possible that we also try to speak in a way that is kind. But there are times when it's important to speak something that is true and that is helpful, but that isn't always received as kind. Or endearing. And again, that comes from that final quote that I said for you, dispraise of one who deserves dispraise. That doesn't mean I think, you know, that we're always looking for that, not a way that I want to live, but if it's helpful, if it's true, then there's a place for it in this world and in our practice. It can be a form of right speech. I want to offer you an example. And this comes from Martin Luther King. Many of you probably came across this passage. And I could come up with many more from Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King is known for, you know, nonviolence and known for his vision, a peaceful vision of the possibility of us judging each other based on the content of our character, not the color of our skin. But Martin Luther King wasn't only a visionary idealist. He was someone who saw things the way that they were. And spoke that truth, even though it wasn't always kind. For example, he said, "A riot is a language of the unheard. And what is it America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. And it has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice and humanity. Now, that may not feel kind to white America, but is it true? Is it helpful to have these dynamics pointed out? I would suggest that it's right speech, though it may not feel endearing for some people. So our job is not necessarily to worry about whether we are liked. Now, of course, we aim toward all three. We mindfully practice speech. We aim toward being truthful and kind and helpful, recognizing that sometimes two out of three is also necessary in this world if we truly take our vow of saving all beings seriously, our bodhisattva vow of liberating all beings. If we take that seriously, then we may be speaking things on occasion that make some people uncomfortable. Thank you, everyone.